Okay, good afternoon, everyone. How's everyone doing? Yeah, everyone's still awake, still with me? Yeah. Good afternoon. So my name is Kate. How's everyone? Everybody shout your name back at me. My name is Kate. Hello. Okay, it's good to meet you. So I am Kate Middleton. But just to clarify with you guys, I am not married to Prince William. Okay? Just in case there was any confusion over that, because I know I look a lot like her, right? Yeah. No? Okay, that's harsh. So I am a psychologist by background. I also work with a church in Hertfordshire. And today we are going to talk about the topic of fear and anxiety. And I've called this session Fear Less because everybody wants to fear less, right? These are not emotions that anyone enjoys having. And so what I want to do in this session is look at what are fear and anxiety all about, because they're such a pain, aren't they? They're such a nuisance. And fear and anxiety are part of our everyday life, whether we like it or not. But sometimes they cause problems. In fact, fear and anxiety cause more problems than any other emotion. And right now, particularly for some of you, in the generation of you that are teens and in your 20s, fear and anxiety are starting to rocket and become a really common problem. So they're the most common thing that I get asked about. So what we want to talk about today is what fear and anxiety are about, and therefore how do you manage them better, and what, if anything, does the Bible have to say about them? So that's what we're going to do. And the thing is you might think that to become fearless, you have to be fearless. You have to have no fear, no anxiety. You might be hoping that in this session, I'm going to tell you how to eradicate all fear and anxiety from your life, how to get rid of them completely so you can be superhuman, never experience those emotions ever again, whatever life throws at you. So I am going to be a big disappointment, because I am not going to do that. Because the thing is that fear and anxiety actually have a purpose. They're part of the way that your brain and your mind are designed to work. They are really, really important. So who has one of these in their house? Who has a smoke alarm in their house? Yeah? Okay, good. So what is the purpose of your smoke alarm? Does it tell you that there is definitely a fire? No. Okay. So who can tell me the last time your smoke alarm went off, why did it go off? Toast. I hear a lot of toast. My daughter's 14. She tried to get a croissant in the toaster. Just so you know, that does not work. And it causes a lot of smoke. So it's toast, it's someone's cooking bacon, you forgot you left a pan on, whatever it is. Your smoke alarm goes off for lots of other reasons, but its job is what? Its job is to grab your attention. Its job is to tell you that something significant might be going on. And anxiety and fear have exactly the same job in your brain, because life is busy, right? There is a lot going on in your world, and you have a bit of your brain, and its sole function is to be scanning the world around you all the time, and it's checking out for signs that something significant, something important might be happening or be about to happen. So let's say that you've just walked out into the road, and there is a bus coming right at you. How does your brain grab your attention? Because you're on your phone, you're on WhatsApp, you're not looking. How does your brain grab your attention and say, quick, stop what you're doing, pay attention to this? What it does is it triggers fear and anxiety. And there is a complex system in your brain and your body. It's a physiological system. It combines things like hormones and stuff, organs like your heart and your lungs, bits of your brain, all of them working together in a coordinated way. And that physiological system is grabbed by your fear and anxiety. And the level in that system is changed immediately so that it can grab your attention. So the first thing that you experience as part of fear and anxiety is a change in that system. It's a change in your body and how you're feeling. So how do you feel when you're afraid or when you're anxious? You get like butterflies in your stomach, don't you? You feel fidgety. You can't sit still. Your heart starts beating really fast. Maybe it's even thumping. You think it's going to come out of your chest. It's thumping so hard. Your breathing is faster. You might feel tingly or even start to feel faint or dizzy. There's a whole bunch of physical feelings that go with fear and anxiety. And guess what? They don't feel nice. Why? Because they're supposed to get your attention. They are supposed to be hard to ignore. Because the whole point is that fear and anxiety have to grab your attention to tell you something important might be happening. So the first job of fear and anxiety is to do that, is to grab your attention. The second job then is to set you up in case you need to do something. So if you stepped out in the road, you're going to need to do something pretty quick. You're going to need to move. Let's say that what's going on is that you're walking across the Staffordshire showground at Soul Survivor, and a bear has just jumped out from behind a tent. Now, you might want to run away, or you might want to face up to it and have a fight with the bear. You might think you could hold your own against that bear. Either way, you've got to be ready to act and react. And that physiological system, that chain of events that goes on, sets you up in case you need to act or react. So your heart's beating faster, you're breathing faster, there's more sugar in your blood. Whatever it is you need to do, you are good and ready. You are poised. That is the second job of fear and anxiety. And the third thing it does then is it triggers the thinking part of your brain to say, hang on a minute. Do I actually need to do something? What's really going on? Actually, this is just some idiot in a bear suit who's just having a laugh. I actually probably just need to ignore them, keep walking. Everything is fine. And so just like a smoke alarm, sometimes your fear and anxiety goes off, it gets triggered. And actually, when your thinking brain gets involved, it's like, do you know what? Actually, I've got this. It's all right. Something significant might be going on, but I don't think it's very likely. Or actually, you've misjudged. This is not a big problem. Or I know this is important, but I've got this. So anything that is important in life will trigger your fear and anxiety system because your brain is telling you it matters. So you're going on a hot date, you're going to feel some fear and anxiety because it matters to you. You're sitting an exam, you will feel some fear and anxiety because it matters. But sometimes the right response is for you to say, actually, do you know what? I've got this. Thanks for grabbing my attention, but I've got it covered. And just like a smoke alarm then, most of the time when it goes off, it is not telling you that the house is burning down. You do not need to leave the building. You do not need to call the fire brigade, press the alert button. What you need to do is the smoke alarm dance. Who knows the smoke alarm dance? Yeah, because all you need to do is neutralize it, turn it off. It's a false alarm. It's grabbed your attention, you've checked it out, but it's fine. You can get on with the rest of your life. So fear and anxiety being triggered in the first place may not be a choice. It may not be under your control. Your brain may trigger them. What determines when your brain triggers fear and anxiety is down to lots of things, your personality, your life experience so far. We all have some common triggers. So if we step out into the road and a bus is coming, everyone will experience fear or anxiety because staying alive is a common goal that we all have. But there are other things that might make some of us anxious, but not others of us. So there may be things that you don't like. Maybe you're afraid of dogs and your best mate loves dogs. Sometimes you'll be in a situation where you experience fear and anxiety and nobody else does. But what you do next is the important thing about fear and anxiety. How do you deal with it? So we cannot stop ourselves from experiencing fear and anxiety. And actually, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means something is important. But how we deal with it, what we do next, is the important thing. Because very often when we have problems with fear and anxiety, it's because of how we react to it that causes a problem. So you can see on the screen a quote from this guy called Alex Honnold. You might have seen the film Free Solo. Did anyone see Free Solo when it was out at the cinema? So this is a film about Alex Honnold. He is what's called a free climber. So he climbs massive high mountains with no ropes, no safety equipment, no nothing. It's just like him versus the mountains. Totally nuts. And Free Solo is a movie that tells the story of him climbing this massive mountain in America and how he did this. And he's in this situation where the slightest slip and he's going to fall off. It's like guaranteed death. So loads of the interviews when they talk to Alex, he's talking about his experience of fear and anxiety and how he's learned to overcome them. And he says this. He says, the key thing thinking about fear is to differentiate between real justified fear and fake anxiety. Fear is a physiological response. Your body is basically sending you a signal. In the same way that hunger is a signal or sleepiness is a signal. And whether or not you choose to act on it is up to you. So Alex says this. He says, fear doesn't need to rule you. And that's the key. The question when we're experiencing fear or anxiety is, who is in control? Do we feel in control? Because fear and anxiety can become a problem when they've grown and when they've become started to feel really overwhelming. So we feel like we're not in control of them. We might even feel afraid of our fear and our anxiety, either because we're not sure where it's coming from or what's happening and we just suddenly feel dreadful, or because we're afraid of the thing that it's saying to us might happen. And all of our brain is saying, seriously, did you know this might happen? It could be bad, and it can make us feel more and more afraid. So freedom from fear and anxiety, fearing less, is not about not having fear and anxiety at all, because we can't do that and we need them. It's about, how do we respond to them? How do we manage them? How do we stay in control? How do we make sure that fear and anxiety don't rule us, but we stay in control of them? And it's interesting, because you might hear people say, oh, the Bible says all the time, do not fear, do not fear, do not fear. Lots of people will say that there's a statement in the Bible saying do not fear for every day of the year. Kind of depends which version you read. But what's interesting is, does it really say that? Because sometimes when we hear that, what we feel is we just feel guilty for having fear and anxiety in the first place. Or sometimes when somebody's trying to talk to us and we've freaked out about something, again, we just feel guilty for having it, or we feel stupid, or we feel weak. Like, no one else freaks out like this. Why am I having this problem? No one else has to sit their exam in a different room. Why am I the person who can't handle it? No one else is terrified of this thing. What is it about me that means I'm having panic attacks about it? And actually, this is one of the most common words in the New Testament for fear and anxiety. And what's really interesting is what it really means. And it's the word phobos. It's where we get our word phobia. You've heard of phobia, when you have a particular fear of something that really makes you freak out. And this Greek word that is the root, the original word, the root of that word phobia, what it literally means is not just do not fear. It doesn't mean don't have the emotion. Because that's impossible. If you're human, you will have fear and anxiety. What it means is, don't flee, don't run away, don't feel like your only choice is to run. Literally, it means to withdraw, to pull back, because you feel like you're inadequate. You haven't got what you need to face up to this thing that's making you afraid. And that's really interesting, because actually, the biggest problem with fear and anxiety is the way that we react to it, because usually our instinctive reaction when we're afraid is to run. If you're afraid of something, usually you run. Think about it. Let's say that you are walking down the street one day and you get attacked by a big scary dog. And then think, the next time you are walking down the street and you see a big scary dog on the street ahead of you, what are you going to do? You're going to cross the road, you're going to turn round, you're going to go the other way, anything to avoid walking past that dog. So the instinct of running away, of avoiding things, is really closely linked with anxiety, because it feels like it makes us stop being afraid. So if something makes you afraid, you're going to avoid it and not have to face it again, because you think it reduces your fear. The trouble with avoiding things, the trouble with running away, is that everything is scary when you're running away from it. Did you ever notice that? Did you ever play a game when someone's chasing you? Or, I don't know, when your parents, those of us who are parents in the room, we kind of do this weird thing instinctively, where you're going up the stairs and when you're little and your mum or your dad or someone chases off you, like, like that. I don't know why we do that, parents. We just do things like that. It's a bit weird. But when you're doing that, even though you know this situation isn't scary, it's just mom or dad or uncle or aunt or whoever it is, you feel like a little spike of fear, don't you? Because everything is scary when you're running away from it. The problem is that the more you avoid something you're scared of, it might help in the moment, so you don't have to face the big dog, you don't feel fear. But in the long run, something else happens. So every time you avoid the thing you're scared of, somewhere in your mind, your brain thinks the only reason the bad thing didn't happen is because you avoided the scary thing. So the only reason you didn't have a bad experience with a dog is because you didn't walk past it. And every time you avoid the thing you're scared of, that link in your brain gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And what that means is that the day that actually you have to walk past a scary dog because there is no other alternative, your brain is like seriously on red alert because it believes that the only reason bad things don't happen is because you avoid the big dog. So the dog has become more and more and more terrifying, not less. So in the short run, avoiding things makes things feel better. But in the long run, it grows our fear. It grows our anxiety. And it makes it harder to deal with, more overwhelming. I don't know, who is a Harry Potter fan in the house today? Yeah. So I have a 14-year-old. I also have a 7-year-old. So we are fully in the Harry Potter zone. The other day when it was dead hot the other week, I'm sat there. I was working on my stuff for coming here, actually. And I'm sat working on my slides. And I happened to notice out the corner of my eye, my son, small boy, running past wearing nothing but small underpants, a Harry Potter cloak, and the glasses. That's the zone that we're in. We love Harry Potter in my house. So Prisoner of Azkaban, we think, is the best book. Do we agree? Okay, you can debate that. But there is some awesome psychology in that book about fear. Because you know the baddies in that book, the monster, the Dementors, J.K. Rowling, who wrote the book, she wrote those monsters based around her own experiences of fear and anxiety when she struggled with depression and anxiety years before she wrote the books. And there's, for people who haven't read the book, which, by the way, you should do, but if you haven't read it, there's this scene in that story where Harry is dealing there in a lesson and he's being taught how to deal with this creature called a boggart. And what a boggart does, it's another type of monster, is it transforms into the thing you're most terrified of. So when you face the boggart, you have to face your biggest fear. And they're learning in a class how to deal with it. And when it comes to Harry's turn, the teacher won't let him face it. And he's having a conversation with the teacher later on in another scene. And he's saying to the teacher, why? Why did you not let me face it? Did you think I'm too weak or there's something wrong with me? And the teacher's like, no, I thought if I let you face it, it would turn into Lord Voldemort, who's like the big baddie wizard of the books. And Harry's like, no, it wouldn't have turned into him. It would have been a Dementor, because that's the thing I'm most terrified of. And these Dementors, based on the author's experience of fear and anxiety, they're these horrible, ghostly creatures that suck all the joy out of your life, and they make you relive your worst moments, and they make you feel physically terrible. You feel shaky and weak and awful, and you feel like you'll never be happy again, and it's just horrible. And Harry's saying that's the thing he's most afraid of. And the teacher says to him this. He says, this suggests that what you fear most of all is fear itself. And that's very wise. And it is. It's very wise. Because it's not the original fear and anxiety that's going to cause you a problem. It's the fact that we are afraid of fear and anxiety. So when we experience it, we freak out. We don't think we can face up to it. We run away from whatever's triggering it. And it gets bigger, and it starts to overwhelm us. Or maybe we don't even know that's what's going on. So panic attacks are what happens when you experience fear and anxiety and the physical changes that go with them, and you don't realize that's what it is. Sometimes fear and anxiety hit so quick and so unexpected that you literally just suddenly in a moment, you're like, man, I feel dreadful. Like, what the heck is going on? My heart is pounding. I feel faint, sweaty, and you think, I'm going to throw up or pass out or something bad is going to happen. So you feel afraid. And of course, that makes more of that system get triggered and you have more of those symptoms. You feel even worse. So then you freak out even more and it's just this big cycle. And that's what a panic attack is. And so you can feel absolutely dreadful and it looks really dramatic. But all it is that initial fear and anxiety, that smoke alarm going off and then you panicking because of it and building it up into a system. So what we've got to do is work out, how do we stop running away? How do we turn around and face fear in the eye? How do we manage fear differently? Because that's how we fear less. So what I want to do in the rest of this session is tell you a story that's in the Gospels from Jesus' life and the life of his disciple, this bunch of ordinary guys who he hung out with, when they experienced a massive attack of fear and anxiety. And what we're going to do is pull out five things that that story tells us about how we manage fear and anxiety different so we can fear less. We're never going to learn how to not fear at all. But by changing the way we respond to it, we can feel more in control. We can be less afraid of our fear and anxiety, and therefore we can fear less. So the story, if you want to look it up later, is in Matthew's Gospel. It's Matthew 14. It's on the screen if you want to read the words. I'm just going to tell you roughly what happened. So this story happens in the moment just after, if you've read it, when Jesus fed the 5,000 people. So they've been out all day. They've been at a festival kind of like this, but with more people. He's been talking. He's been teaching all day. And at the end of the day, in the evening, they've got rid of all the people. What's happening is that Jesus is going to go off on the mountain to pray. And so he sends the disciples. He clearly wants some headspace. I think he wants some alone time. So he makes the disciples get into a boat. He says, you go off across the Sea of Galilee. It's a lake, really. But he says, you go off there. I'm going to go have some alone time for a bit. And by this time, it's late in the day. So he has to kind of persuade them. And it's interesting because the disciples are, a lot of them, sailors. They know a little bit about sailing. And it's like they're a bit reluctant to do this. They're like, really, Jesus? Maybe not. Maybe we'll do it in the morning. Because they know that you go out on that lake at night, it quite often gets windy and stormy and difficult. They don't really want to go. In fact, the word in their language for water has the same root as the word for chaos. So they're very wary of water. They know that they might be sailing into chaos, into unpredictability, into storms, into difficulty and stuff like that. So they're wary. They're basically, Jesus is calling them out of their comfort zone. And so the first thing that I want to point out to you as we're thinking about fear and anxiety is this. Fear and anxiety are inevitable. And the more that you want to step out of your comfort zone, the more you want to push the limits, the more you want to find out what you're capable of and learn new stuff, the more you will experience fear and anxiety. Because anything in life that's worth doing will trigger fear and anxiety. And in fact, many of you who are like teenage or late teens, early 20s in that zone, you are at a stage in life where your brain is changing really rapidly, where you are developing the adult brain. Your brains are still forming. And because of that, you experience more of certain emotions. There are more things that are triggering for you than there are for some of the grown-ups in the room. So what that means is that some of you in particular will actually experience more fear and anxiety than an adult would. So there are situations and things that will happen that are more triggering for you than there are for us. So for example, friendships, relationships, stuff like that. Because you're learning about how to do adult relationships, how to get on better with people, how to do all of that stuff, your brains are much more reactive to anything that's to do with friendships and relationships than mine would be, because I'm a bit more dull and I'm a bit more grown up and quite a lot older. So you will experience fear and anxiety, anything that's important to you, anything that's valuable, that's significant. You may be at a life stage where you're having to sit exams and stuff like that. Believe me, as a mum, as someone who works in schools, I want you to experience some fear and anxiety. In fact, your brain operates best with a little bit of fear and anxiety because it grabs your attention. It helps you focus. It stops you getting distracted and your mind wandering off when you're supposed to be thinking about maths or history or whatever it is that you're doing. So you want some. What you don't want, though, is to get overloaded with fear and anxiety. So we know that anxiety is inevitable. You are not a failure or weak or anything like that because you're experiencing anxiety. It may just be to do with what life is throwing at you, but you do need to deal with it. So the disciples get into the boat, and lo and behold, they do sail into a storm. Literally what the language says is the wind is against them. It's buffeting them. It's blowing at them. It's really hard work. Now, I am not a sailor. I don't know if any of you sail boats and stuff. I am rubbish on boats. I once got seasick on the canal, so I don't really do boats. But I bike a lot. I like to ride my bike. And so when I know what it's like to cycle against the wind. Anyone like biking here today? When you are cycling against the wind, it is flipping knackering, isn't it? But it's really hard work physically, but there's something emotionally really difficult. It just feels sapping, it's energy sapping, it's soul destroying, fighting against the wind. And that's what they're doing. They've hit a challenge in life. And anxiety can be like that. It's flipping knackering when you're fighting anxiety. It feels soul-destroying. It feels emotionally hard. And the story says that they know that they're a long way from the shore when this happens. They know they've got a long way to go. Some of you are facing things in the coming months that you know you're really anxious about, and it feels like forever until you're the other side of them. It feels like forever until you get the other side of your GCSEs or your exams or whatever it is that you're facing. How do you get through that stuff when you know that anxiety is against you? Because everything in your mind is saying, did you know this could go badly? This matters. What's going to happen? Maybe you'll fail. I don't know how this is going to go. And it's exhausting. It's just like sailing against the wind. So the second thing I want to point out to you is the disciples did this, but actually they were okay. Jesus sent them there. You'll see in the story, it turned out okay in the end. And the honest thing about anxiety is, although we experience it and it's warning us that something bad might be happening, it is not telling you that it is happening. Remember the smoke alarm. So the second thing is, anxiety is not truth. It's a smoke alarm. You don't want to put it in charge of running your brain. You might have seen the movie Inside Out like 4 or 5 years ago, the Pixar movie. And that is telling you the story of what happens when you let anxiety run your mind. Because it will freak you out about a million things, and most of them will never, ever happen. Do you know how small a percentage of the things that we worry and freak out about ever actually happen? It's a smoke alarm. Don't call the fire brigade every time someone puts on toast. It is not telling you truth. So just because you're anxious does not mean that the bad thing is definitely going to happen. Sometimes your job is just to manage your anxiety in the moment, to remember that you have got this covered. Yes, you're sitting an exam and it's scary and it matters, but you've worked hard. You can do this. And the next thing that happens in this story, they're in the middle of this difficult time, they're freaking out, is that Jesus comes to them in the middle of the storm. It's a kind of a weird story because he walks to them across the water, which is unexpected, let's face it. And you know what's interesting is, in the middle of their fear and anxiety, they are freaking out so much that they don't even recognize him. He's a good friend of theirs. Admittedly, it was an unexpected place for him to be, walking out across the water, but they don't even recognize him. Sometimes when we're freaking out, we can't think clearly. Did you know that if you think of your anxiety on a 0 to 10 scale, at the end of that scale, in the 8 to 10 zone, there's this zone that's called the hijack zone. Well, that's what I call it anyway. And what happens there is, when the thing that your brain is warning you about is potentially so important that it doesn't need to just get you to think and analyze and like make a decision, what do I need to do? It just needs you to do something quickly now. Run, move, get the heck out of here, do something quickly. So what it does is, it actually switches off your thinking brain. And it triggers a reaction that's so strong that you have done it. You've run out of the room. You've freaked out before you've had a chance to think about what you're doing and think if actually that was a good decision or not. Sometimes when we're really anxious, it becomes so hard to think clearly. And that's often the moment when somebody will try and rationalize with you. You know, some well-meaning teacher or a parent or a friend is like, oh, let's just think about this. Just calm down. There's actually nothing to worry about. Everything's fine. And your brain is going, just get out. It's so hard when you've been hijacked. And they don't recognize Jesus at all in the moment. And it's interesting what he says to them. The first thing he says is this. He says, take courage. Literally what that means in the original word is, you have got something within you. It's like, take courage from within you. You can do this. This is not as bad as it feels. You are feeling like you need to run, but you can do this. We as a family, we lived in France for 2 years. And in France, the French, they don't say, you know, when you're going into an exam or something, they don't say good luck. They say bon courage, good courage, take courage, just like Jesus says to them here. Literally what that means is, you have got what you need within you to get the good outcome here. You can do it. I like that so much better than good luck. Good luck is like, oh, good luck. You never know. Maybe you'll come through. You might be lucky. It might come off, or it might go horribly wrong. But hey, good luck with that. Bon courage, good courage means you can do this. You've got it. Go in there, hold your head up high, face up to it. You can do this. And that's what Jesus says to them. He says, stop freaking out because you've got this. Your fear and your anxiety may be kicking off, but you've got it covered. You can do it. So the first thing we have to do when fear and anxiety strikes is we have to pause for a minute and think, whoa, I can do this. I've got something within me. I can face up to this. So how do you do that? How do you do that when everything in your physiology is firing at you, telling you to run, to leg it, to get out of there? What do? The best thing you can do is grab a moment to pause. Because if you react instinctively in the moment, what you're going to do under the influence of fear and anxiety is you are going to run. You're going to leg it. You're going to panic. If you're prone to panic attacks, you're going to get into that cycle where you feel worse and worse. So you have to pause. If you can, find a quiet corner, get out for a minute, nip to the loo. Just don't, you know, if it's before an exam and everybody's panicking about the exam, don't stand with all your friends. That's just going to fuel your anxiety. Go find a quiet corner and grab a moment. The next thing you can do is breathe properly. When we're under the influence of fear and anxiety, we breathe dead shallow. And that changes the level of some important chemicals in our blood, which makes you feel really weird. When you feel dizzy and tingly and faint and sick, it's often because you're not breathing properly. So one of the best things you can do to make yourself feel better and to get back in control is just take some good deep breaths. So we're going to do it now. So if you feel happy to do it, you don't have to, but you put your hands on your rib cage right now as I'm stood up. I've got this mic thing in my hand, so I can't do it, right? Now imagine that your lungs is a big balloon. Well, actually, there's two big balloons here. Normally, when we're breathing, we only breathe from the top two-thirds of the balloon, and when you're anxious, it goes down to like the top third because you're just, you're panicking. We are going to take some breaths where you're going to try and breathe right to the bottom of the balloon. So your lungs come down to here. So with your hands on your rib cage, when you take a proper deep breath, you should feel your hands move apart. So try now for me. Take a really nice deep breath. That's it. And imagine that you're filling that balloon right to the bottom. That's it. Okay, yeah, you can just keep doing that. That's fine. The other thing that we can do is play with how we breathe, how long we spend in each bit of a breath. Because you thought breathing was just a one-step process, but there's three steps to breathing. There's breathing in, there's how long the air's in your lungs for, and then there's breathing out. So there's something called 4-7-8 breathing, and that's to do with taking a moment to breathe really well and making sure that you're in the right bits of the breath for the right length of time so that you're not panicking and taking those little breaths. It's called hyperventilating when you're panicking. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a breath, and what we're going to do, we're going to breathe in for a count of four, we're going to hold it for a count of seven, and then we're going to breathe out for a count of eight. So when you breathe out, you're not just going to go like that. You're going to imagine that you're blowing out the candles on somebody much older than you's birthday cake, those of you who are teenagers. So like someone my age or your mum or dad's age or your youth leader's age. Or just imagine that it's their birthday cake. We have a lot more candles. So you have to blow out over a period of time, right? So you can put your hands on your rib cage if you like. If you think you've got that sussed, you don't need to. I am going to count. I cannot breathe and count and hold a mic at the same time. And we're going to have a go. Are you ready? Are you with me? Okay, so we're going to give it a go. So in a minute, I'm going to say go, and then I'm going to count to four when you breathe in, seven while you hold it, and eight while you breathe out. Ready? Go. Two, three, four. And hold it. Two, three, four, five, six, seven. And now breathe out nice and slow. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. How are you feeling? Chilled? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's not easy, is it, doing 4-7-8 breathing? Did anyone find it super easy? It's quite hard. A couple of you found it easier than others. This is not one of those breathing exercises that you sit there and do meditatively for like an hour. 4-7-8 breathing is something you do quickly. It's in the moment. It's 4-5-6 quick breaths, like, I am about to lose it. I need to calm down. I can tell that I'm starting to feel anxious. I need to do something to drop the level. It is what you can do when you've nipped into the loo for 5 minutes before an exam. Or if you can't sleep at night, 4-7-8 breathing has been shown to be really helpful at helping you calm down and drop off to sleep at night. It is hard work. And let me also say that some people find, if they're anxious, that focusing on their breathing makes them freak out even more. So if that's you, then you might find that 4-7-8 breathing isn't that helpful. The other thing you can do is hum or sing along to your favorite tune. Because when we're humming or singing, we have to breathe well. It's just that you can't always do that when other people are around, so that's why the breathing thing is handy. So if you struggle with anxiety, you might want to put your favorite song on your phone, if you're allowed them in school or whatever. And then what you can also do, if you know you're about to lose it, nip to the loo or find that quiet corner, put your headphones in and either hum or sing along to the tune, because that will also calm your breathing down and help to drop the level of some of those changes that can make you feel weird. But this is the first thing that we do with anxiety, is instead of going with it, freaking out and running, we pause, we take courage, and we turn around and we face the thing that we're scared of. And we practice. So at the beginning, when you start practice doing breathing exercises or whatever, you're not going to find it that helpful. Keep practicing. Practice it not at times when you're totally freaked out. Practice it when you're calm. Get really good at it. Because then in the moment when your anxiety is firing, you'll be able to use it. The next thing you need to do then is win back some ground from your anxiety, because anxiety spreads. That's the other trouble with running away from things. So at first, you're just scared of the specific type of big dog that you had the bad experience with. But then one day you're walking down the street, you see a different type of dog. Maybe it's a bit smaller, but you're like, I don't know. Just to be on the safe side, I'm going to cross the road anyway, because it's still a dog, right? And before you know it, you're scared of all dogs, not just big dogs. And then one day you're watching a movie and there's a big dog on the film and you're like, I don't like dogs, stop, I'm not going to watch that movie. And then you're scared of seeing dogs on the screen. And anxiety grows, because as we avoid it, we feed it and it gets bigger. It's like a forest fire, it spreads. So the second step of dealing with anxiety is to stop, but to win back ground, because we've learned to face it. We're good at breathing and dropping our anxiety level, and we know that it's just telling us that this is important, that it matters, so we can face it. We can start to do the things that we're scared of. And if you work with a therapist to do that, what they won't do is just drop you into your most terrifying possible thing and make you do it. They'll get you to make a list of things and then choose the one that's least scary. So let's say you're trying to overcome your fear of dogs. It'll be like, let's look at some pictures of dogs. I used to be terrified of lifts when I was a teenager. I couldn't go in a lift. I had panic attacks if I went near one. The first thing I had to do to overcome my fear was stand in our local Tesco's, very glamorous, and watch people going in and out of lifts. And at first, even that made me feel a bit freaked out, to be honest, because I really didn't like them. But what happens as we face our fears and we practice our breathing is that your brain starts to learn that actually, do you know what? All those people going in and out of lifts, nothing bad happened. And you're starting to relearn the patterns. So winning back ground off anxiety is about facing up to it. In the story, remember the story, disciples are in the boat. Jesus has walked out on the water to them. They're freaking out, except one, Peter, who I love. He's a good guy. He quite often acts first, thinks later. And in this case, his response to his anxiety is awesome, because he sees Jesus and he thinks, do you know what? Maybe I can do it. And so he does something crazy, something unexpected. He's not cowering, hiding because of his fear. He gets up and he steps out of the boat and he steps into his fear and anxiety. And this is the exciting thing, is the more you win back ground off your fear and anxiety, not only do you get rid of it, so you stop running from it, you stop running scared, but you discover something about yourself. You discover that you can do things you never realized you can do. Like, who would have thought Peter could walk on water? That's nuts. But when he steps into his fear and anxiety, he discovers something about himself. He releases more potential. And that's the problem with fear and anxiety. Because when you're running away from it, it keeps you hiding. It keeps you limited. And it means you never discover all the amazing things that you can do. because you can't sit the exam, or you can't walk past the dog, or you can't, whatever it is that you're afraid of. So when we learn to face fear and anxiety, we open up the possibilities of what we could do. And particularly, we open up the possibilities of what we can do when God is with us. Because we know that when we've got our eyes on Jesus, we can do things that we really shouldn't be able to do at all. He can take us places we never thought we'd go. When I was the age of a lot of you in this room, I never thought I would be doing this kind of thing when I was my age. Actually, honestly, I never thought I would be this age at all. But I never thought I'd do this stuff. But when we have our eyes on Jesus and we learn how to manage fear and anxiety well, we can release new potential. And of course, while Peter's focusing his eyes on Jesus, he's doing these amazing things. All the time, his brain is going, seriously, are you kidding me? Look at all these risky things. There's wind and waves. And by the way, did you know you're walking on water? Not renowned for holding you up. And when he takes his eyes off Jesus for a minute and sees all those things and he focuses instead on his fear and anxiety, he starts to sink. But remember that what Jesus doesn't say is, don't fear, you idiot, why are you even afraid? He says, don't worry, you don't need to run, you don't need to freak out. And he reaches out to Peter in his fear, and he takes him back into safety. And we need to remember that even though our fear and anxiety might keep screaming at us, all we have to do is hold our nerve. And particularly if Jesus is in the boat with us. Because my fifth point about fear and anxiety is this. It is, don't try and do it alone. Did you know you are never meant to do life alone? Human beings are designed to need human beings. We're going to talk about that in my next session in a bit. So don't do it alone if you're fighting fear and anxiety. Talk to other people. Talk to your friends. Talk to your teachers or your folks or your youth leaders or whoever it is who can support you. But also talk to God about it. Because when you have your eyes on Jesus and he says to you, take courage, he's not just saying you've got the solution within yourself. He's saying something else amazing. He says to Peter, don't be afraid because I am here. I'm in this with you. You're not doing it alone. And the honest truth is, whatever we face in life, we don't have to face it on our own. Because if you know Jesus, if you are a friend of Jesus, he says to you, take my hand and we'll do this together. And we'll face this together. And you will discover that you can do things you never thought you can do. This is another word that's in the Bible in the New Testament. It's actually the word that's used for anxiety and worry. Because that worrying side, when your brain's just going round and round and round thinking about something, is often the worst bit about fear and anxiety. And I love that what this word means literally is that you are pulled apart by your worry. Because your brain is so busy freaking out about so many things, you can't focus on anything. You are literally pulled apart by it. Worrying is horrible. But what the Bible tells us to do with our worry is this. This is from Philippians 4. It says, don't worry about anything. That word. Don't be pulled apart by your worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Take it to God. Share it with Jesus. Tell him about it. Thank him for all he's done. And tell him about the things you're worried about. Because then it says this. It says, you will then experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. And the amazing thing about this is that in those moments when you are freaking out, so you cannot concentrate on anything, you are pulled apart by your fear and worry, you are seized by panic, your rational thinking brain has been switched off, you're lost. If you share that with Jesus, he does something beyond your rational brain. He takes control and he helps you to stay calm. He helps to bring peace. He helps you to face the things that you're most scared of. So praying, sharing them with Jesus is an amazing and powerful thing to do. And if you struggle with fear and anxiety, you are so in a great space today to get someone to pray with you. Go to the chat zone after this session. Share that with a human being, but then together share it with Jesus because he would love to help you overcome it. So I'm going to finish with this quote. This is a very clever lady called Brené Brown. She says lots of wise stuff. So what she says is this. We are all afraid. The best thing about talking about fear and anxiety is if I said right now, who in this room has ever experienced fear and anxiety? Every single person in the room will put their hand up. I could ask every single person in this room, what are you afraid of? And we would all have probably quite a lot of things that we could talk about. I don't stand on this stage as some clever clogs who's overcome fear and anxiety, so I am scared of nothing. I called this session fearless, but I'm not fearless. I fear less because I know how to handle it and because I know that I've got God with me. But I have fears. I have anxieties. I have stuff that wakes me up at 3 a.m. and makes me sweat. I have things I have to share with my husband or my best mate because they scare me. I'm worried about them. I have to share my worries with Jesus just like anyone does. But Brené says we're all afraid. We just have to get to the point where we understand it doesn't mean that we can't also be brave. Fearing less is not about not fearing. It's about how we respond, how we face up to it, and how we share it with God. So why don't we just close our eyes for a minute, and I'm going to pray. Because I know that in this space, many of you will have come today because you do struggle with fear and anxiety. And before we go, I want to pray that God would just bless you, that he would bring that peace to you. But if that is you, don't leave Soul Survivor without getting someone to pray with you. Maybe it's your youth worker or an adult you came with, or maybe go to the chat zone and do that. We've got some of the enabling team here today, so you can come down to the front and there are people who will pray with you today. But for now, let's just take a moment to pray. And you might want to hold a hand out. That's just to show that you're saying to God, like, I'm open to what you want to do with me. But also, I want you just to imagine that you're holding your fear in your hand. Now, I don't mean like you're holding the big scary dog or whatever. I just mean, but just imagine you're holding your fear out to God. This is the thing, God. This is what I'm scared of. I want to hold it out to you. I want to give it to you. Father God, I just pray for every single fear and anxiety that is being held out to you now. And I want to thank you that we are all fearfully and wonderfully made, that your brain, your mind, your body is amazing. It was created by an amazing God. But Lord, we want to say sometimes fear and anxiety is tough and it feels overwhelming and it feels scary and we're exhausted by fighting it. So right now, for every fear and anxiety that is held out right now, God, I want to ask you through the power of your Holy Spirit that you would bring peace to that person, that you would extinguish the fires that are burning and smoldering of fear and anxiety for every person in this room, that you would overcome their mind and their rational brain, overcome everything in them that is saying, get out, run away, you haven't got it, that you would instead bring calm and courage, that they would know that you are with them in whatever they face today, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, whatever life throws at them, they needn't do it on their own. So I just ask your blessing and your power on every single person in this room. In Jesus' name, amen. Awesome. Thank you so much for listening.